That's right there.
White belly up.
This is the game. It's a cat and mouse.
Smoked a turkey.
Yes.
He is down. He is freaking down.
Said he shot an absolute giant.
Fall obsession, baby.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another Fall Obsession podcast episode. If you've been listening to our podcast for a while now, you know I am Sam Thrash with Fall Obsession. I'm hosting this episode. Joining me today, as always, is my good buddy, our media production manager, Mr. Nick Powell. What's up, buddy?
What's up, guys?
Man, and we got a couple of special guests here with us today.
Very special.
One of them you guys know from other content on Fall Obsession and a previous podcast episode, pro staffer Waylon Langford. Waylon, welcome back to our podcast.
Thanks, guys. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you back. And then we also have a first time joining us on Fall Obsession podcast, a good friend of all three of ours, Mr. Chance Nelms. Chance, welcome.
Awesome, guys. Thanks for having me.
Happy to have you, man. And honestly, I feel like almost you should be hosting this podcast episode because you are hosting us right now. Guys, we're sitting in probably one of the best man caves I've ever seen in my entire life right now. The man cave of Mr. Chance Nelms.
It's not a probably for me.
It's the best one I've ever seen.
No, there's no work in progress about this. This is freaking awesome.
It could be
man.
Done right now, and it would still be awesome.
We're looking at stud whitetails on the wall, wild boar.
Let's see how many
fish. I mean, we got everything around us. This place is awesome, man. I appreciate you you letting us come out and take up your time and your space this morning.
12 stud whitetails on the wall right now.
You can count.
Sometimes, at least to 12.
Wait a minute, where's 13 at?
Mm. That's at the taxidermy still.
Oh, okay. All
taxidermy
right.
Taxidermy guy's got it still for some reason.
Yeah, we'll get to that later.
Yeah.
So, guys, before we get into our discussion today, as always, I have to mention that this podcast is brought to our listeners by our friends over at Elite Archery. We're very grateful to our partnership with them. They've done a lot for us, keeping quality products in our hands this year. I know this year I'm running the new 2020 Cure. Nick, you're shooting the Ritual.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, we're not going to Montana with them this year.
Wah, wah, wah.
It's a bummer, but hopefully we'll be putting some whitetails down with them. So
maybe next year.
Yeah, always next year. So if you guys have not checked out Elite yet, please go to elitearchery.com, check them out, see everything they have to offer. And of course, above all else, I recommend going to your local dealer and checking them out, shooting them for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Take the shootability challenge, compare them to other brands, and see if it's right for you. The biggest mistake you can make is buying a new bow before you try an Elite. So, I've always said that.
Yeah, you have.
So, guys, we're rolling into this. We're going to keep it casual. We're talking about deer hunting in Texas. And a good way, I think, kind of as we talked in our pregame, a good way to kind of lead into this conversation, I think, is talking about the environment that both of you guys hunt in and that I believe a majority of these deer on the wall around us have come from. Because it's not what most whitetail hunters would expect as whitetail country, if I'm right there.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'll start off. I was seeing the caliber of deer these guys were killing, and when I went out to look, I just said, there's no deer out here. So where are y'all really hunting these deer? Because when I went out there, they took me to this 1,000-acre wheat field. And I said, there's no deer here. No way. No way. But I was proven wrong, as you can see by the walls. Yeah.
Definitely a cool area. The Red River Valley's used to be a secret. I think it's kind of getting out now. But man, you go out there like Waylon's saying, and this is not going to be good. I can see for 10 miles, and there's nothing. And all of a sudden, the sun comes up, and you see a giant stand up on a fence row 2 miles out, and he follows the doe down to the little creek you're sitting on. I mean, the place we've been hunting for 15, 16 years now is, 2,500 acres or so. And we're literally hunting on about 20 acres of it.
Right.
But that 20 acres is 2 miles long, basically. And it's awesome, man. It really is. And we got several properties out there, and you can go to any of them and see a Boone and Crockett every year, whether you get him or not. he's the one that's got the county record now, but that thing's, you know, it showed up, and I've seen deer at that caliber as well out there. You just don't get a shot at them because they're so far out. But man, you would, when you first go out there, you just don't, you don't think you're going to get anything, maybe a quail or something, but it's different for sure. And I grew up hunting the Red River, but on the far east side and just the Oklahoma side. So it's different, man. It's but the ag out there and the minerals coming off the river. I mean, we've shot, what, 2 or 3 bucks over 300 pounds out there, which is unheard of.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think our big one was 315. Just massive deer. In fact, the that bigger one that weighed 315 almost didn't get shot just because he was so big. You know, 155-inch deer standing out in front of you, and you're like, oh, he didn't look that big until he gets out there with the herd of the young bucks and does, and you're like, that's a horse, you know? Something special for sure, and we've been blessed with it. Waylon's got the crown jewel right now with 200-inch or so.
Yeah, that was pure luck.
Right place at the right time.
Exactly.
God bless him, you know, is what I say. I don't believe in luck.
If he would have been hunting in his stand that morning, he would have got him. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad he wasn't there.
On that day.
He owes me for sure.
So, and that's a really cool story. I'm not going to make you tell the whole story all over again, but I will tell our listeners that you have told that story on this podcast before. It's episode 8, titled The Langford Buck, and the county record that they're talking about right here, guys, is Waylon tells that story to us. Quite an awesome story, in my opinion, and definitely a buck of a lifetime for sure.
Oh, definitely so, no doubt. A buck of a lifetime.
What was his score? Tell us again.
204 and 5/8.
204 and 5/8.
Yeah.
That is absolutely crazy.
And, you know, and like I said, it was a buck of a lifetime for me. We don't, where we're hunting, we have monsters. They're not all 200 inches, you know. I mean, there's been a 180 that Chance has been after for a few years now. You know, when you're talking anything above 150, to me, that's a monster.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You know, yeah. Free range, not protein managed. What we do is we put in our time. We sit, take off work, get the kids out there with us, you know, and put in our time and try to shoot a mature, you know, 5.5, 6.5-year-old plus deer. And
yeah,
you let them get to that age and you really can see.
And I think that's a big time factor there is we don't shoot the 3.5-year-old deer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our little rule is we let them grow. We let them become mature. Because we do have plenty of the 120s, 130s out there. But like you said, we just sit there and let them, oh, he's going to be good in a couple of years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's that old story. Oh, he'll be better next year.
Right.
Well, we actually let them get better next year.
Yeah.
And I think that's been a big factor in the quality of deer that we're finally now seeing. Yeah.
It's good, too, when you can have enough guys on a big enough piece of property that have that same mindset, too. Because I know for a lot of guys with smaller leases, their struggles are they might have that mindset, but their neighbors don't. And that right there puts a lot of their efforts out the window, unfortunately. So it's really awesome that you guys can all operate under that same mindset out there and like you said, grow big deer. So,
well, it took me a few years once I joined them to, oh, why did you shoot that one? Because it's the biggest deer I've ever seen. What do you mean?
Little basket rack 8 out there.
Yeah. Like I said before on the other podcast, I'm used to hunting Llano. You know, that's where I've hunted my whole life, basically. And you get a 120-inch buck come through, and you thought you did something, mm-hmm. you know? So, yeah.
Yeah, the big factor out there is letting them grow. Like I said, the minerals coming off that river is crazy. You can see it in the dirt. But, I mean, those deer have, they got year-round groceries. We're not feeding year-round. We feed, you know, during season to bring them in, but they got something to eat all year.
Mm-hmm. What kind of stuff do they have to eat?
Oh, man, we got wheat during the winter. We got Milo, hay grazer, cotton. Jeez, what else is out there? They told us when the canola came in that they wouldn't eat that, but they eat it.
Yeah, that's funny that you mentioned that. Right behind my stand was a 38,000 acre canola field. And I was kind of disappointed when I found out that's what they were putting in, because I'm like, oh man, that's going to take away all my deer. You know, now they're not going to come.
Mm-hmm.
No, they said they wouldn't eat it, but every day they'd come out in that field and just munch and munch and munch on that canola.
That's funny. And it's not just the deer out there, man. It's the wildlife. I mean, we got cranes, we got geese, we got ducks, hogs that we try to keep out just because they chase our turkeys and deer away. Mm-hmm. And it's crazy to watch them do that, but they do.
Yeah. That's a never-ending battle.
Yeah. Invasive species, for sure.
I mean, this guy shot a giant trophy tom, 2 years ago? 3 years ago now?
3 years.
Yeah. I mean, it had 5 beards on it. Are you kidding
me? Oh, my gosh.
What kind of animal is that? The turkey.
It's a pterodactyl.
Have you killed anything? Have you yet to kill a trophy in any species?
Like I said, man, it's all luck. I'm in the right spot at the right time.
The other cool thing about out in that area is just you can see everything. You're not in a, you know, growing up bow hunting and around the Texoma area, you get in those woods and you got, you know, 20 yards of visibility out there. Like I said, you can see for miles and you can see all the animals, and it's nothing to have, you know, a normal sit out there is, you know, 30 to 40 deer.
Wow.
And you'll see a handful of shooter bucks, whether you can shoot 5 miles or not. Quaylen probably can, but I like to get them in bow range myself.
and that's something that it's hard to bow hunt out there.
Yeah.
Back it up a little bit. Talking about you can see forever, one of the things that is unique about this place is you'll be sitting in your stand and I can't even tell you how far it is, but you can see the dust cloud from the deer running across coming to you. You can't see the deer, all you can see is the dust cloud. And you look at your watch and you're like, well, they'll probably be here in about 30 minutes, you know? And you can just watch that dust cloud come, get closer and closer, and finally...
That's crazy.
Finally, he'll top a ridge, you know? Or not a ridge, but a little... I don't even know what you call it. A washout. Mm-hmm. And you'll say, oh, yeah, okay, that's a good buck. And you'll just watch him come on in. But that's how far you can see out there. And there's no... It's not hardwoods. I mean, you can't, like, set up 30 feet in a big old oak tree or something.
Mm-hmm.
We just don't have that.
Yeah, we got the whole place. We got one tree stand.
Yeah. And that's an old cottonwood.
That one's gone now, but the one we got left's in that giant mesquite. So.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
The other cool thing about there is just as far as you can see, most of my hunting I do out of a turkey chair. Which you're going to get cold because it's cold out there. But, man, it's awesome to have a deer in that bow range and not even know you're sitting there on that fence line or wherever you're sitting.
That's what I was going to ask. Was it just sitting hunting in ground blinds or tripods? Or?
No, man. We got a couple houses for those crazy days because the weather out there is ridiculous. I think the coldest was negative 17 wind chill. I don't remember the exact temp. Negative 17 wind chill one day was my coldest hunt.
Golly.
Yeah.
You know, it's
because there's nothing out there to block anything.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's wide open.
Wind chill's stupid. It's normal. 25 is a normal day, mile an hour wind.
Yeah,
but I like to sit on the ground a lot, which is really cool. And it keeps you mobile. I mean, like I said, you can see forever. So if you see a good deer coming in, you can get up, ease down, and move.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always hunted out of blind and following his footsteps. He got me into hunting off the ground. And I love doing that now. But I've got an 11-year-old son that has started hunting with me. And so it's kind of hard to be sitting on the ground with him. So I've had a nice deer stand, but here recently we've been throwing pop-ups.
Yeah.
Hunting out of them. That way we're semi-mobile, you know. Hunt one morning and I say, oh, we need to be about 400 yards down. It's real easy to just fold that thing up, move it. And plus, with him, of course, you know, he's getting a lot better, but he's still a noisemaker.
When you say you need to move that pop-up, I just picture like a cartoon. You're inside the pop-up blind. You just pick it up, and you see just feet underneath it.
Don't think we haven't did that.
Yeah, just look out there in the open plain. Just the blind. You're going to see him walking across.
Floating down the tree line.
Or something. Yeah. It's cool to see how far we've come, though. And we got some newer hunters out there with us now. And just to see them passing up those deer that most guys would take. And like I said, our two secrets is pass up the deer that you want to shoot and wait till it's the one that you have no question in your mind to take.
Yeah.
And put in your time and sit. Last year our big deer was 167, and it was off of a newer hunter, and he just put in his time, and he's shot some really nice deer over the years, and that's now his personal best. 167 typical is it's a stud, man.
Yeah,
wow. For sure.
It's a stud. It's a beautiful buck.
Very heavy. He was a very. How much did he weigh?
Don't get me lying to you on that. He was 260, 270.
For some reason, you said 260. That's exactly what I was thinking it was.
He was one of our smaller deer, if you will, but that's still a stud.
Just a little guy.
Speaking of that, I think our smallest one was 254, personally. I don't know about yours. I think Waylon got a monster 1 year, horn wise, that was sick. He actually had, what, 5 bullets in him?
Yes.
No joke.
Probably. Damn. Yeah. Upper 170 class, but he was busted from getting shot so many times. And he was, but as far as healthy deer, I think 254, 250 is like our smallest deer out there. Of course, that's a mature buck, like we were saying.
Right.
Right.
That's a whole different story, Matt.
I was going to say, now I'm curious about this five-bullet deer.
So I'll start that off. Stud of a deer. I was the first one to see him. Came out. Perfect morning. I had a group of does out in the wheat field right on me. I was sitting in that giant mesquite that we were talking about, and I was like, I saw him coming. I didn't see his body at all. I just saw horns coming. I was like, oh man, I think I actually texted Wayne. I was like, I got a Boone and Crockett on me right now.
Yep, you did.
This deer's, I said, he might not be 180, but he's scaring it. You know, he's right there. I said, he's massive. All I could see was horns, and he walked right up to the fence line and stood behind probably our second largest mesquite tree out there. And I watched him for an hour and a half.
Oh, wow.
And all I could see is horns the whole time. And he was just watching his does, and I was like, oh, man, he's gonna jump the fence and come out in the wheat, and he's going to be mine. Well, that didn't happen. That's how most time hunting goes. But he circled around and went back down in the draw, and I actually got a shot at him, but I was shaking like a leaf from watching this monster for an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Called Waylon and said, man, I got a shot off, but I don't feel good about it. And we looked for a while. And that was the first thing in the morning when that happened. And I think we found one or two drops of blood. And I was like, man, that place out there, you know when you get them or you don't, you know?
And yeah.
We looked for him in fact, I didn't hunt that evening. I don't remember. But anyways, was it about 2 weeks later? Maybe not even that long?
You talking about when I got
there? Yeah.
I think it was longer than that.
It might have been. It was a good while back into the season, and Waylon was hunting hard and wasn't seeing the one he wanted, and then he, all of a sudden, this guy pops up in the creek, and Waylon's got his crosshairs on him. Kind of the same deal. Had a short window opportunity with him, but he saw the frame that I saw.
Right. It was one of those. As soon as he walked up out of the creek. I mean, I didn't have to throw up my binoculars. You see him, and it's automatically, there he is.
Yeah.
Massive
and
deer.
It was just, he was standing broadside, facing from left to right. And so once I saw him, I just threw the rifle up, bam, you know, see him go down. And then, of course, the unfortunate thing, I walk over to him, I'm all pumped up, you know. Yeah, he had a busted left main beam.
Yeah, oh, just past the G2.
Yeah.
And we're talking, when I saw him, he was intact. And he was literally 22, 24-inch spread buck, you know, 12-inch tines, that caliber of a deer. He would have grossed into the 80s. He would have netted in the 170s for sure.
Right.
We have
him here, so you can see him.
Yeah, we actually got him here.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll have to get a picture of him too. That way we can put it up with this episode. So. Yeah.
He's nice.
Awesome buck. But the crazy thing is when Waylon got him.
Oh yeah.
He was the smallest deer we've taken, and Waylon gets to looking at him, and he's got my bullet in him, and he's got five other bullets in him.
That thing had not counting mine, had five bullets in him. And when I say bullets, I mean when I skinned him.
Uh huh.
We actually found the bullets.
Taking some holy shots. Cow.
When I saw him come up out of the creek, I didn't notice anything different about him as far as him limping, hurt. But like I said, you know, it was really quick, so I really didn't have time to study his body, because all I just saw was the antlers, and it was, you know, immediate decision to shoot. But he was, I would say, man, his weight, he was less than 150 pounds.
Really?
Real skinny. And then when I started skinning him out, started finding all these bullets in him, the meat was just, I'm going to say, just rotten. It just infected. And probably a good 13-inch plate from each bullet hole that was in him.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's one of those that was unfortunate. I decided not to keep any of that meat.
No, yeah.
Yeah, sure. Better safe than sorry.
And I love the meat. That
right.
That's what we hunt for, really, is the meat. These antlers that we're able to get, it's just a big bonus.
Yeah.
But we mainly hunt for meat.
We all.
So choosing not to take any of that meat, it was really disappointing. Yeah.
Shows you how tough them out there. We talk about the size. Waylon's dad started hunting with us out there, and he was, you know, the old school 243 guy. And
right.
Man, we quickly learned that these whitetail are a little bit more big game-ish than your normal South Texas whitetail, and we had to up our game. So yeah. Most of us are 300 mags, 700 rim mags, caliber, 150 grains and up, you know. So, yeah. And that's also for distance shooting, but when you're shooting a 300-pound animal, a 223 or 243 is just not.
I think my dad lost two deer.
Yeah. He's a good shot too, so that.
Yeah, and then he said, no more. And next thing I know, he went and got a 270.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah, and he's talking about long distance. I was a bow hunter. I mean, that's all I did until I got out there and realized real quick, okay, if I want to start taking deer, I'm going to have to get a rifle. And not only a rifle, but a long distance rifle.
Yeah.
And so I've spent a few years coming up with a good long distance rifle. And I remember one year I was hunting with my dad. We were sitting on a fence line, and the woods were 850 yards away. And we're hunting and sitting there and saw two good bucks come out. I mean, I'd have shot them in an instant. Well, that's before I started shooting long distance. And I said, okay, that's not going to happen next year. I'm going to be able to reach out and get that one next year.
Mm-hmm.
And that prompted me to, oh my gosh, spend all kinds of bukus of money. And, you know, I wish that wouldn't have happened, or my wife wishes it wouldn't have happened. Yeah, but it took a few years. I got my rifle dialed in, all my bullet dope and all that. We're good to go. So I'm real comfortable with long distance now.
Awesome. Yeah. It's one thing about hunting, it's not a cheap hobby.
No. Not at all.
We've had a lot of good times. I guess it's your dad's biggest deer.
Mm-hmm. What are you talking about?
I think, what'd he go with? He was just shy of 160.
Was 154.
154. Solid 10-point, man. But it was cool because we saw him. We tried to go up kind of a tradition as we eat at the same little steakhouse barbecue joint opening eve, and we always go out as a group and sit, and we saw him the day before opening day, and I think I was the only one that saw him, and I was like, man, that's a good deer. Someone's going to get that one.
Yeah.
In fact, I said he's 155. Yeah. And he was probably, 3 miles away looking through the spot and scope.
That is one thing y'all need to know about Chance. He can look at some antlers, and he's one of them that can tell you, oh, he's 132 and a half. I don't see how he does it.
But Waylon's dad got him. In fact, I think he hunted pretty hard for that first week, and I was like, man, you got to change stand sites. He's coming in over here, and he changed his stand site and got him that next morning or next evening. I think it was one sit.
Yeah.
So that's the cool thing about their scouting is you can actually scout. You can see the animals that you got coming and adjust to them.
Yeah, and like I said, we can see so far from my stand. It's hard to explain, but I can see deer where he's hunting, and I'll text him, okay, you got one coming from your left.
And I don't know if we even mentioned where we're at. We're right at the salt fork of the Red River and the Pease River, which is right there at the base of the Texas Panhandle, between Vernon and Childress, basically.
Yeah, the coordinates to that place are...
I wasn't going to ask for specifics. Right. I wasn't either. You guys are pretty picky about that. So
Man, any of that which country is understandable. Up there, it gets flat and turns into ag, and the river's right there, and the buddies that grew up out that way say there wasn't any deer, and supposedly the rumor is the Texas Parks and Wildlife guys brought in some Kansas bucks, and they definitely mirror the Kansas bucks as far as size and antler growth.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking of when y'all were describing like how big they were, how much they weighed.
Yeah.
I was like, those sound
and
like
we're not that far from Kansas,
Iowa, Ohio, big deer like that.
So one thing that I was going to ask, and it kind of fits here, I wanted to ask about just the overall deer behavior, because it's a like we've been talking about, it's a different country up there compared to what a traditional hardwoods whitetail hunter might expect. How do your deer act out there? How is the rut? How's all that come into play out there? Is it any different?
Yeah, it's definitely different. Growing up, like I said, I hunted that Texoma area, Red River area, and if a deer smelled you or saw you, they were gone like the wind. And out there, it's really funny because we hunt those little draws and creek bottoms, and you spook a deer and it doesn't go to the creek. It runs out in the middle of this wheat field 2 miles. You're like, what is it doing? So the deer behavior is definitely different. But when you're talking about hunting these mature bucks, once that rut hits, man, they're a slave to the women, to those does. And so we try to get on those does, on those doe patterns. And, the trail cam picks, you'll see that good buck, and he's always 2 o'clock in the morning. But once they get that season hits for them, they chase them does out and they make the mistake. But the deer behavior out there is definitely different from other parts that I've hunted.
The biggest, you pointed it out, the biggest thing was that shocked me was you see a deer, the wind blows, 25, 40 miles an hour. That's just normal.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it wasn't. I'm like, oh man, the wind's going to screw everything up. No. But then, you get a 50 mile an hour wind and you think, okay, we're not going to see anything today. No. They come out of the creek, and they just run straight out into the wheat field, 100 yards.
Mm.
And that's their safety spot, is out in the middle of the fields.
Huh.
It's interesting for sure.
Yep.
And they don't bed where you think they would bed. A lot of times in the mornings, the sun comes up, and you see deer they're miles from any kind of cover. And literally that 2 foot swath on a barbed wire fence line is where they're bedding in the evenings, which is, kind of talk about that Kansas thing. So it's kind of the same thing, but they definitely deer behavior is different for sure.
Yeah.
They're not as skittish. They really aren't.
No. I mean, don't get me wrong. You're not going to walk up and pet them, but.
right.
Yeah.
I guess because they can see, they don't run like you see, like you're talking about the guys that hunt the big woods. Like they did, those deer disappear.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
And maybe it's because hey, we can still see you.
Yeah. It's cool seeing those pods of does and how they interact, as far as hunters or you know, we talk about, we got some big bobcats out there, and watching those bobcats, trying to get on those does, and watching those does get the younger does behind them, and they're not, like I said, since they can see, I guess, and they feel like, hey, we can probably outrun anything, they're not as skittish, they're not as scared.
Yeah,
that's like one of their defense mechanisms.
Yeah, for sure. Now, the big bucks, man, they, you don't see them. They stay low, and they, right. You know, it's that first light, last light thing, just like any mature animal. They get smart.
Mm-hmm.
But like we said, man, you put in the time, and you pattern the does, and they're going to mess up because they have that drive to continue the herd, you know, so.
Yeah.
And I think that's what I'm going to contribute to my success is I put in the time.
Right.
I'm not the weekend warrior that just goes out there, you know, drinks beer around camp all night long and doesn't go hunting the next morning.
Right.
Both Chance and I, and we put in our time, definitely, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what the hour count is. You know, you're talking to bass fishermen, and they say you got to put 40 hours on the water to catch a 5-pound bass, so.
Well, you got to put 100 hours in as a deer stand.
You know, we're blessed with our job to where we can take that big chunk of hunting season off and,
yeah,
and
very much so.
Put in the time. But I'm going to break his county record pretty soon, so he just needs to.
Man, I hope you do. Secretly.
No, you're probably going to see it, and then he's going to shoot it a week later. Or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's the only downfall is the mind games with yourself on seeing those big deer and not getting a shot at them. I literally see a true Boone and Crockett deer almost every season. And I had one that I saw like 3 years in a row, and I just never could get on him. And he was just a massive buck, man. A clean 8-point buck that was going to be a 180. Are you kidding me?
Is that on Waylon's wall now?
No. Waylon, I don't think Waylon ever saw him.
No. I didn't.
Not yet.
I think other guy out there might have got a glimpse at him, but just massive deer. And the other cool thing about our deer out there is, for the most part, they're clean typicals.
Oh yeah.
We have some kickers and stuff, but besides Waylon's big buck, we talked about that giant 315-pound deer. He was a 16-point, but still typical. You know, they're real typical deer.
So I was gonna ask, do y'all use any other type of like attractant, like doe estrus, rattling antlers, anything like that, or even, you know, VAPL? I know we have a partnership with them.
Well, speaking of our partnership, last season, I threw out some VAPL, yeah, and I was amazed. Within 3 days, bam, I had all kinds of deer around that place.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's where I shot my buck last year, was off that.
Okay.
So yeah, good shout out to them. When I first started hunting with these guys out there, we have, it's called Sanctuary. We do not go into the small woods that we have. We always hunt on the outside of these woods. And for a long time, they didn't have feeders out there. Well, I've always had a feeder, so I threw mine up. Because I just couldn't understand how, well, you know, you got to bring these deer in. You got to bring them in. But recently, you finally threw a feeder up out there. But really, you haven't had luck off that feeder, have you?
No, not really. But that's a different story.
But rattling is definitely a thing. I definitely do that. But as far as the estrus, putting out all kinds of scents like that, I can't say I really do.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like every time I try it, I don't get any results from it.
Imagine it'd be harder in a more open area.
Mm-hmm.
I myself have not used a whole lot of estrus scents or anything either, even in hardwoods, but just the amateur in me thinking here is thinking that a wide open country probably is not going to be as productive or something like that.
So yeah. One of the guys has a nice decoy. And he had some real good success. I don't think he ever shot anything off of it, but he had a lot of good interaction with bucks coming in on that decoy. And I think because of the openness, they have to see something.
Yeah.
I haven't had any luck with rattling at all. Grunting and you know, the doe bleats, that stuff seems to work pretty good when you can see them. And if you have some deer out in front of you, it might draw them in coming up out of the bottom or whatever. But I think having that decoy, and I haven't done it yet, but it's definitely a technique for out there. Man, I don't even think he was hardly calling. They were just coming. They were just seeing that deer out in the pasture and coming out.
So. Yeah, it's interesting because it reminds me of what Drew said in the last couple episodes of how he uses that fan decoy to draw those antelope in. And it just their curiosity just gets them coming.
Yeah, similar concept. Yeah,
it seems like the same, like not the exact same terrain, but similar to where it's wide open. Because I know Montana's wide open like that, kind of like those wheat fields. So imagine if you stick the decoy out there, the curiosity peaks and gets them in.
Well, he was talking about all his success having it out there. So of course, well, give it to me. So I take it, go out there, nothing.
Oh man. So, I'm looking at these deer that are on your wall here. Give us one of these memorable stories. Mm-hmm. Give us a memorable story from one of these guys that we can talk about.
Well, I always love messing with Waylon. So, he's the guy, like we were talking, that's always trying different attractants and scents and, hey, we need to get this camera going. And I've always been the guy who's like, hey, I'm just going to go put my time in. And it's kind of my de-stressor moments, and I just don't want to have to worry about anything. But, you know, I've kind of followed with him as far as getting stuff over the years, starting feeding stuff. But anyways, he's always running the cameras, and I'm always asking, hey, you got anything good on the camera? And he's always like, I don't want to show you because you're going to kill it type thing.
Yeah, this is exactly the truth.
Makes sense. So I think that happened maybe 3 seasons in a row. Anyways, it's always fun him showing me the picture and then I showing him the laydown pick. So
it's 3 times and your dad.
3 times and my dad. Yeah. And that's always fun to get him riled up. But probably my two most memorable hunts is when I was talking about the hunting whitetail out of the turkey chair and you're sitting on the ground and the deer come in and out there they're curious and you can pattern them. So I find a nice tree to get up next to, and the tumbleweeds out there are awesome for cover. So I kind of make a little makeshift blind real quick, but I mean, you're on their level. This one morning though, it was nice and crisp and calm. The wind wasn't blowing like it normally does. And it was just dead quiet. And all of a sudden I could hear deer coming and I couldn't see them. And they circled me. Because I got basically 2 draws on me, and they came from behind me. So I just sat there for like 30 minutes hearing these deer, and they just kept getting closer, and I didn't want to move or anything because, like I said, I'm sitting on the ground. So all of a sudden, the deer are so close I can smell them, and everybody that hunts and has shot a nice buck, what a nice buck smells like. So he's right there on me, and then it goes dead quiet. And I'm like, did they leave? And then I can hear the eyelashes of this thing blinking, and it was a crisp morning, so I guess maybe it was crazy. Like I could literally hear him blink, and I kind of turn, and he's literally probably 3 feet from me.
Oh my word.
And I just froze, and he's just looking at me. I was like, he's about to horn me or something, so we kind of had this stare off because he knew something wasn't right, but I guess my scent control was perfect, and like I said, there was zero wind, so nothing was swirling. But the does got out in front of me, and something spooked them, and I want to say it was a cat, but we have a lot of cats out there. But they kind of spooked, and when they did, he did, and I was like, man, I'm not going to get him type thing. So I basically did a burpee and rolled around, and I shot this dude off my knees, but he ended up being the big 8-point that I went with Waylon when he shot his big deer that year. We both went to the Big Game Awards, and that was a pretty memorable hunt. Just the way the hunt went down, and then, both of us going, and then him with the county record going to the Big Game Awards, and we were in Lubbock that year, I guess, wasn't it?
Lubbock, yeah.
But hunting off the ground is awesome. It's right there with bow hunting. I don't know if you can get a deer any closer than 3 feet from me, but if you can hear his eyelashes blinking, he's in your lap. And the other deer is a big 9, and it was kind of the same experience. But he was one that Waylon had on camera. So whenever that deer came in close and got him off the ground, I got to show a picture of Waylon, and he was like, "Dang, I knew you were gonna get that deer." Yeah. But man, if you can get on a place where you can get mobile and get on the ground and just, to me, it's a freedom thing. I mean, you're not stuck in a blind. Not to say I don't like blind hunting, but I don't know, when you're on the ground and you're able to sit where you want, and you can adjust to their movement and their patterns. And like I said, when they can get right up on you, it doesn't matter what weapon you're hunting with, man. It's just cool having them right there in your lap. So
yeah.
There's a good story to all these, man. It really is. Mm-hmm.
That might be one of the most intense stories I've ever heard.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
The cool thing, though, is you know, the guys that are out there with us, and then me and Waylon's friendship, you know, that we can hunt together and then put these things on the wall to remember our memories, and since he's our taxidermy guy.
Well, hey now, let's not get too far ahead of ourselves. We got another episode coming on. So a little sneak peek for our listeners there.
Okay.
So kind of we're kind of getting to our time for this first episode. So we normally ask guys to give us one of their favorite memories. So you kind of just did on that.
Yeah, for sure. That was personally as far as my hunts, my probably best memory though out there was after being on the place for a few years and seeing these deer and knowing what we had. I our rule out there is you get one buck, and whether you bring a guest or whatever, that's what the rule is. And so we had a big deer. Waylon had him on camera, and I gave my tag to my dad. And that morning, other guy, Kelly Cato, was sitting, I don't know where he was sitting, he was way off, and he saw him, and he's like, "Man, it looks like an elk, you know?" And he didn't get a shot at him. But we knew he was in the area, and scouting out there and knowing how the deer move that evening, I was like, "I know where he's at, Dad, we're going to get him." And so I said, we got on the Google Earth and looked at, we're going to slip in, and we're going to sit right here on this corner of this fence line. And it was awesome because when we were walking in, we saw him. He was chasing two does, and we didn't even get to where we were sitting. So we actually got to stalk this deer.
Oh, nice.
And he's the biggest typical that we've taken out there. He was just a big 10. He I don't remember what he grossed, but he netted 164, just a massive buck. But to go in there with my dad to stalk a deer of that caliber, and we did it off the ground. So it was awesome. And then to send him a picture. Because he had a cut ear, so I just sent him a picture of that ear. And he was like, he knew exactly what it was.
I knew exactly.
You're like, "Oh man."
Right.
So how big is this place y'all are leasing?
Geez, so we got several properties. The bigger one is 880 acres. Yours is what, almost a section, 580 or something?
Yeah.
And then we got another 640, and then another... Yeah, I don't know exactly the
so around,
number, but it's several thousand acres. The ranch that we're actually hunting on is it's kind of chopped up as well, but it's about 60,000 acres total.
Okay.
Big place, but they cover, you know, several, what, four different counties.
Oh, yeah.
So.
I gotcha. How many guys do y'all have?
There's six of us now.
Six.
Six guys on probably 3,500 acres.
Gotcha. Just trying to see if there's any openings available.
You know, and we say 3,500 acres, but... we're only hunting 100 at
right,
a time,
yeah.
You know.
If that,
yeah. Because, I mean, yeah, I can see it, but I'm really only hunting these creek bottoms.
Right. Yeah.
And I think the widest part of the creek with the woods is what, 100 yards?
Maybe. Yeah.
You know. So you're just sitting on the edge of these creeks, waiting on them to come out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and like we were talking, they travel. The creeks and the draws, they used to travel. But
that's what was going to be my next question.
I don't think they actually bed in them.
Yeah.
They bed in just fence rows, and in the mornings is definitely when you see them just come from
you'll be
wherever. Saying,
Where did you come from? There is nothing out there.
Yeah, because the property that I hunt, it backs up to a creek, and we've seen several pictures of them traveling that creek. I haven't had the success because I haven't put the time in like you guys have, but we have some big deer. Not quite as big as y'all.
Some pictures.
You have some stud whitetails out there.
I don't know if they're as big as those, though.
I think you're sandbagging there.
It's funny you bring that up because we always argue. Looking at those stud deer that you're hunting on the trail cam picks, me and Waylon, I don't know if we've ever agreed on a trail cam pick. But they definitely will trick you. I mean, I'm getting to where I just know the caliber, you know, as far as how big the animal is out there. But you'll look at a trail cam pick, you're like, it's not. It's a good buck, but it's not huge. I was like, wait, that thing's...
And that's exactly what happened when your dad's...
Oh, yeah. He's like, my dad's... That's not a shooter.
Yeah.
164-inch, whatever.
Yeah. Just a little guy. A cool buck.
Exactly.
Yeah. Waylon's got some cool stories like me, but I don't know which one was his. He was pretty excited for that county record.
Oh, you got it. That's what you say.
Yeah. Yeah. How do you not be?
He's told that one. So
you want to hear my story? Listen to episode 8.
Well, we can roll for another episode here and get into some of Waylon's stories too here. But again, I'll be the Debbie Downer and bring us down and keep trying to wrap this up a little bit for this first one. So, your favorite hunting memory, we always ask newcomers to the podcast, what is a bucket list hunt that you have not gotten to complete yet?
Bucket list hunt would have to be archery hunt before a nice elk. Been on one. We didn't get a shot. We're in archery range of everything but an elk. It was a crazy hunt. It was a good time. Great hiking, camping trip, if you will. We didn't get a shot at anything.
Where at?
But a big elk, and I would love to do it in Texas. I got some buddies that have some properties. And in fact, last year he took a 438, and that's just a massive elk.
Oh, my word.
Yeah. To have it in Texas would be even greater. And that's free range. It's not high fence range. I'd love to do it.
You and this guy over here.
That's my number one.
Well, mine also. Yep. Now, archery, rifle, it doesn't matter to me.
Archery would be cool, but if the opportunity presented itself and I just happened to have a gun in my hand, taking it.
Mm. Well, guys, I appreciate y'all joining us for this episode here. And again, thank you for letting us sit down with you in your awesome man cave here and spend some time. So really,
you guys are always welcome.
Yeah, I wish our listeners could see this place.
We'll have some. We'll at least have some pictures, but pictures don't do it justice.
Not at all.
This place is awesome.
Every time I come here, I feel like I'm in a lodge.
Yeah, exactly.
Lodge. Yeah, that's
very similar.
Very, very much so. Well, guys, thank y'all for listening. We really appreciate y'all continuing to follow our Fall Obsession podcast. If you guys have not already, please check us out online. FallObsession.com is the hub. That's where you can find all of our content, product reviews, educational articles, videos. A lot of the different video series that we have previously and currently working on are on our website and our YouTube channel. So be sure you go check those out. Follow us on social media. Subscribe to our YouTube channel if you haven't already. And, of course, hit that follow and subscribe button for this podcast on your favorite podcast app. We really appreciate it. Guys, thank you all again.
Thank you. It's been fun.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Nick, you got anything else?
That's all I got, buddy.
All right, guys. Well, we will see you guys again next week for another Fall Obsession podcast episode.
See you later. See ya.